Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and I'm here today. We're actually going to take a little bit of a veer and switch things up just a little bit. Today, we're instead of being with a sommelier or a beverage director or a bartender or a winemaker or distiller, as we usually are, we're actually here with a chef. He's a friend of mine. His name is Jesse Schenker. He's the chef and owner of Reset Restaurant in the West Village. It's definitely one of my favorite local restaurants. I know that Gabe and Catherine, my business partners and the chef and pastry chef of our restaurants, are huge fans of Jesse's and close friends of his. So I'm just super excited to have to switch things up and have Jesse on today.
Well, thanks for having me, Joe.
It's great to see you, man. So I mean, part of the reason that it makes sense to have you on our show, though, is that you do the wine programs at the wine program at your restaurant. How did you kind of fall into doing that?
Well, it's tricky. I mean, because we are, you know, it's just me and my wife, so it's a small family owned restaurant. And, you know, we do everything from, you know, you name it, we do it. So basically, it was like, you know, we started with the general manager when we first opened like 3 years ago, and you know that the position kind of didn't really, we realized we didn't, you know, kind of need the position, so to speak. And it just kind of phased out. And Lindsay kind of took over some of the wine ordering, and we kind of developed a relationship with our wine vendor. And, you know, we kind of just, you know, started doing it. And then as I realized how much people love the wine and how much it, like, you know, I really kind of, you know, took a passion into really learning about the wine and, you know, why it made sense with the food and the different producers and the regions and the grape varietals. And I really just studied, and I, you know, I kind of found a little niche where I realized what people really like. And the menu, the dinner menu, is so succinct and small. You know, it's like, it's just very quality driven, and, you know, it's not huge, and, you know, it's smaller plates. So I wanted the wine to kind of match with that. And once I got comfortable and control with the kitchen and smooth and kind of comfortable the way everything was flowing, it was like, all right, now I can put my energy into the wine. And that's been the recent, like, year, I would say. And, you know, it's been a blast.
So. Yeah, and for those of you who haven't been to the restaurant, I think it's just like what you think of as a quintessential West Village restaurant, what you'd hope that more restaurants would be like, but they don't always deliver on. I think, you know, at Delanimo, we get a lot of chefs from bigger restaurants coming in saying, oh, this is kind of my dream kind of kitchen, my dream little restaurant. We're like, really? It's so small. But but I think that you get that at Reset as well. And it feels like you're there. It's so cozy. It's so homey. You feel the love that you and your wife bring. And it also feels like with the menu, you guys are, you're doing stuff that's like, you know, it's not a huge restaurant. You don't need to appeal to 300 people a night. So you're cooking really what you want to cook.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, it's like that. I mean, we want to, you know, we try to bring a good amount of technique and finesse to the food and, you know, I don't want to say show off a little bit, but definitely strengthen our culinary muscles. And, but then at the same time, we want it to be fun and warm. And I think you do get that, you know, people do come in and they sit down. You could see me in the kitchen. You see my wife at the door, you know, everything's hands on, you know, I mean, it's very, I mean, I could turn around and see the whole dining room. I mean, the restaurant's like people's living room. It's like 800 square feet. It's tiny, you know? So the same thing with the wine. We want it to be, you know, comfortable and fun and warm and succinct, and, you know, and that's kind of direction we've taken it.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's a tiny restaurant, but making a huge splash, two stars in New York Times, two stars in New York Magazine. You're named one of the 30 under 30 from Forbes and Zagat. And so you're doing really well with a tiny restaurant.
Yeah. Doing really well. No, things have been great. I mean, we've definitely made some impact, and, it's fun. So, you know, when it comes to the wine, I want to make the same impact. So, like, you can come in and get a 5-course tasting menu for, you know, relatively, you know, for under $100, and, you know, you get caviar and scallops and lobster and foie gras and all these great, you know, you know, precious items. And I want the wine to fit with that. Because for a long time, the first couple of years, you know, you'd have these wine drinkers come in and these big, you know, Burgundy guys. And they're like, you know, your food is amazing, but your wine list is doesn't match up. It doesn't make sense, you know. And for a while, people were bringing their own wine. And it was kind of, it wasn't insulting. I mean, I understood it. And like, you know, people with big, collections, like, of course, why would you buy wine when you have so much to drink? So it made sense to me. But, you know, I researched that and I investigated that. I'm like, what do they mean by that? What do you mean it doesn't stand up to the food? I didn't really understand that. You know, I just knew it's a Pinot Noir. What's the difference? You know, it's, you know, so I kind of learned a little bit and then I just kind of became like a name brand whore, so to speak. I just was like looking for, you know, I would go through all these great wine lists, including your own, and, you know, just looking at all these wine lists and seeing what did I see, you know, like what were the common themes, you know, what were the common producers, you know, when you think Chablis, you think Ravineau and this guy and that, you know, I was looking for all these, you know, producers, and then I went on the hunt to where to find them, you know. And then I also spoke to some of the diners at the restaurant that I became close with, and I said, you know, let's do some consignment stuff, you know, I need some bottle age on my list, and all the producers are selling current vintage, you know. You know, so I've had some great experiences with some of my regulars that I actually go to their homes and, you know, just pick out of their wine cellars and kind of just put it on the list, and it's very interesting.
Well, I mean, I think that's a huge compliment to your food when you have these, you know, collectors of great wine, or just people who are just, you know, avid diners who are saying the food's outstanding and you need great wine because it, you know, to match the level of your food. Something that I like to say, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this, especially as a chef, is that wine is kind of like the sauce that the chef, you know, it's the sauce that gets plated tableside, but the chef doesn't get to actually ever taste the sauce.
Right.
Because once the food and the wine is in your mouth, the wine affects the flavor of the food, and the food changes the way the wine tastes. Would you agree with that? Do you think it's overstating it?
You know, it's tricky. I think yes. I think if you have, you know, a delicate piece of fish or crudo, and you're drinking a Rhone wine or a big Barolo, it's going to overpower the fish. I mean, I think it's just, you know, a wine that's too big for the food or too acidic or too tannic, I think it's going to, it could, you know, when you take the bite and then you have a sip of wine, and as you're chewing, you're swallowing the wine and the food, and it can kind of, yeah, I mean, I think so. I think some wines are better at accentuating the food, and then others can totally just dominate.
I mean, I also love this story and this idea of, you know, you became the beverage director at your restaurant because it's a small restaurant and you have to learn how to do those things. You know, I became default plumber our first you know, our first year opening at Del Anima. What were some of the things that you found to be really surprising about the wine industry and buying wine?
Surprising, I found, well, once I kind of figured out who these great producers were, I realized how highly allocated they were, and I thought that was surprising. You know, I figured, like, you know, what why can't I get that wine? You know, if there's only, you know, and then I understand, oh, there's only so many cases, but, you know, how come, you know, all these big name, you know, Per Se, Danielle, all his, they're all going to get the wine. Like, why can't I get the wine? Like, you know, like, help the little guy. Like, I thought that was surprising, you know, that these, like, highly allocated wines. I also, you know, realized how the sales reps are. I mean, some of them are really full of shit, you know. I mean, it's just, it's like, so true. They come in here and they, like, they're trying to sell you, and I'm like, they'll tell you things that aren't even true, you know, like they're not even educated, you know, and, you know, it's not always the case. Obviously, there's some great ones out there.
I find that, you know, so I taste with a group. We do weekly tastings with all the sales reps, with our assistant beverage directors and our cellar hands. And when I have not a very bad temper, but when I find a rep who's just saying something that is total bullshit in front of like my whole team, I get pissed.
Oh, sure.
Because I look at it as a moment to learn, and like, this is an opportunity, we can all taste together, we can learn, we can share experiences. Right. But if he's trying to just say something,
just to talk,
and it happens,
right? No, it happens. Yeah, it definitely happens. And it happens to me probably way more than it happens to most people, because I'm the chef, I don't know wine, I'm learning wine, but I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, if you tell me, you know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago, if you would have told me red burgundies were, you know, Grenache, I wouldn't have believed you. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know. So it's kind of like, you know, people, you know, now that I've learned a little bit, it's kind of hard. I can point out these, you know, the BS artists that come in and they're like, oh, you got to try this. It's blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm like, I'm looking at you like, get out of here. Like, you got to be kidding me, you know?
Yeah, I find that once, once those BS artists start relying on point scores, then I'm like, you really have nothing to back it up. Like, if that is the story that you're trying to tell about this wine, there right. really isn't much substance. You don't know what you're saying. You don't know what you're doing.
Right.
So what wines did you find that you were immediately drawn to?
Well, I think just again, I try to listen to the guests. I mean, that's like, I tell my chef de cuisine, sous chefs, I tell, you know, like, let's listen to the diners, because they're going to tell us about the food. Like, yes, I think it's good, and you might not, or this one might not, or internally, we might all agree that it's fair, but, you know, or it's great, or it's not good, but the diners will ultimately tell us. So we test new dishes, we bring it to the level we think it's good enough to serve, or we like it a lot, and then we let the guests kind of tell us, you know, whether that's just looking if they finish the plate, or asking the servers for the feedback, or, you know, hoping that, you know, the diners will be honest. And most of the time they are honest with you. So the same thing kind of went with the wine. You know, like I tried to find those sweet spots where I realized what people were drinking. And our Burgundy, you know, our Burgundy list is probably the biggest because, you know, I think, you know, most of the food, it's not too rich. It's not super heavy where, you know, it needs big wine. So it's like really, you know, I think Pinot is great. And then some of the stuff can go really good with an Oaky Chardonnay. So, you know, I think that's like our happy balance there. But yeah, I was just definitely drawn to Burgundy start from that basis. Cause most of the diners were like, you know, red Burgundy, white Burgundy, mm-hmm. like we're people were ordering like the wine drinkers, the foodies, the people that understood what was going on. And they just, you know, and again, high acid stuff, Rieslings, Austrian whites. I mean, have really,
I was going to ask you about acidity as well, because I think you find a lot of, beverage directors and sommeliers, you know, of this current generation, just being super into like ripping acidity.
Totally.
Do you find that you fall into that as well, or what do you think?
You know, I don't want to be like the follower, like, you know what I mean. It's hard. I want to be like stand on my own two feet, but like definitely. I mean, like the guys that I really respect most in the industry. I mean, they're Riesling nuts. I mean, that just, you know. So I think it says something, because it's kind of like a, you know, I think the average diner, like, there's definitely a misconception about Riesling, and, you know, it's all sweet, and, you know, a lot of it is, but not all of it is, and, you know, it's kind of that wine that, it's, like, good, it's perfect for reset food, it really is, because, like, we do a lot of crudos and a lot of salads, and, you know, things that tend to be higher, you know, higher acidity levels, and, you know, it works. It really does. You know?
I also tend to like Riesling with things that are kind of fatty and lower acidity levels as well.
You know? No, definitely. Agreed. Yeah.
It kind of fits both ends. Have you ever bought wine that you were just like totally psyched about? Like, oh, this thing is freaking awesome. I'm so psyched. And then like no one would buy it.
Yeah, it totally happens all the time. Totally happens.
Like what, for instance?
I brought in, well, it just recently started moving, but I guess I brought it at the wrong time. I bought as much Cola Marais. I got a bunch of St. Albans, like all the Cola Marais, like a billion different sites. Well, not a billion, but like as many as he had. And I got like five bottles of each, and I did like a whole spread on Cola Marais, like a whole page. And, you know, the stuff just sat. And like nothing was over $100, you know? All the bottles were under 100. And I mean, we're talking about great producer, great wine. And, you know, I probably brought it in early fall, so it wasn't like too cold, or it wasn't even cold this, it didn't get cold this winter till like the end of January, but it didn't really move. Now it's starting to move a lot, but at the time it was like disappointing. I'm like, how it's not going, you know, like why do people just focus on the you know, the domestic shards, and, you know, like, what, you know? And it kind of was frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have ordered that in a heartbeat. I was just down at this restaurant, Bibiana, in D.C., and they had on the list Marissa Cuomo, who's like a very good producer from the Amalfi Coast. I know, but we can get it around New York. But they were so proud to feature Marissa Cuomo that it made me think, well, if they're so proud to have it like that, and then I want it. I want it there. So that's also surprising to hear that even with like the dedicated page, they weren't going after it.
Yeah. Shocking.
what do you find people are drinking a lot of?
I would say domestic Pinot. You know, I mean, I have a Soder North Valley Pinot from Oregon. That's just, you know, it's a great wine. I mean, you can't really, good price point, good value. Can't hold on to that. What else? Wine's by the glass. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's big. You know, people love Sancerre. You know. It's like, I can't go through like so much Sancerre, even in the wintertime. and it's tricky, you know. And then a lot of, it's tough to get good white burgundies for a reasonable price, so it's like, it's tricky, you know. So we have a handful that are for that are, you know, under $100, and those fly off the shelves pretty quick.
With white burgundy and $100, you kind of have to go like off the bean path a little bit. Yeah. Maybe to Chablis, you could do like Macon, like in the south of Burgundy.
Right. No, Chablis definitely will. That'll move. We have this Noko Pinot Noir that we brought in, and it's, I mean, $50, can't beat it. Like, just flies out the door.
You mentioned the Sauter as well. I mean, if you can ever find any Sauter sparkling rosé. Not that I want to diminish the amount that is available for me to purchase out there, but it is such a flipping good wine.
Yeah.
It is like the best domestic sparkling wine, I think.
We might get it back this season, the rosé from Sauter. But I've never seen the sparkling.
They're not always around. They're
tough to get.
Allocated. There goes that word. The A word. Anyway, we're gonna take just a quick break, and we'll be back. I want to ask you a little bit about your childhood growing up in Florida, how that influences you today, and your appearance on Iron Chef.
All right.
Called Intrigue by Obesity on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. You know, there's no more telling aspect, no more revealing virtue of a group of people having evolved in a lovely way than how they feed themselves, how they entertain, how they put food on the table, what they put on the table. Heritage Radio Network provides the clearest evidence that there's hope for us yet. Heritage Radio's like Fairway Market in that we both care deeply about what you're having for dinner tonight. Heritage Radio Network is not just about food, though. Every time I tune in, I learn something about things other than food, too. Architecture, design, stuff like that. But from where I stand, I still say, if you can't eat it, what's the point? For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
And we're back on In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, here with chef and owner of Reset Restaurant, Jesse Schenker. Jesse, I did want to speak to you a little bit about your early experiences with food. I know we've spoken about this before, but like you got into food really as a child.
Yes, very young.
Tell us about how it happened.
It's crazy. You know, it was really instinctual. I mean, I guess some people just, you know, you wake up, you know, you're a kid, you pick up a pen, you like drawing, you just can't stop drawing. It was that with food. I mean, I was just drawn to it, eating it, playing with it, you know. I mean, watching my grandmother, great-grandmother, you know, in the kitchen when I was like barely a toddler, you know, and just so intrigued by the paring knife with the apple or, you know, peeling the celery, whatever it was. I just loved it. I remember coming home from school when I was in elementary school. And this is probably like, you know, early 90s. And there was that show, Great Chefs, Great Cities. This was like before Food Network even existed. And like, you know, you could see Danielle Ballou when he was like in his 20s and John George. And, you know, I loved that show. That was like, I would rush home just to meet the show. I think it started at 3:00. I wanted to catch it. You know, experimenting with food and making a mess in my parents' house. And, you know, and then in high school, just getting totally stoned and like experimenting and making a, you know, just totally screwing up the kitchen and then coming home and going bananas. So they were just, you know, they were for it. I mean, anytime they would travel, anytime we'd go out to eat, I would take menus and collect cookbooks. And, you know, I'd go to like these old bookstores and get like, you know, Scott Fay's cookbooks like for like 50 cents, like these old torn books, and just was so intrigued by everything. So I started going to a vocational school while I was in high school, like dual enrollment kind of thing. I didn't like high school. I eventually dropped out, got a GED, and finished with the vocational. And as cliche as it sounds, I mean, I had an older friend of mine who was a manager at McDonald's, and I was like, dude, give me a job. He's like, okay, you know. So I was like 15. My parents used to drop me off like after school, and I'd like, you know, mop the floors, and I kind of worked my way around. I did toasting of the bread, and then, you know, eventually the line. And I remember like looking at everyone in front of me and like wanting their job and wanting to be quicker than them. You know, like I was just very like, you know, I was eager, and you know,
this is at McDonald's.
This is at McDonald's. That's awesome. You know,
you're the only one who's really ambitious at McDonald's.
I was. Well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of a no. I was definitely. I mean, I didn't have to work. It's not like, I mean, I did it. I mean, I put a couple bucks in my pocket, which was good. But you know, I need to. And then there's a family owned like little Italian restaurant that I washed dishes at for a long time, and I would watch the cooks, like they would, like, you know, the flames and the fire and the burns on their arms, and I wanted that, you know, like I just wanted it. And so I went after it. I mean, I just, you know, I did the culinary school thing, and then eventually I started, you know, finding out who these the best chefs in the city were. And you know, I'd go to the James Beard website, or it was before the website actually, it was in books. You know, I this place Cafe Max, it was in Pompano Beach, and it was like 20 minutes from my house, and I went to the chef and I called every day, and you know, I annoyed the shit out of him, and eventually he was just like, all right, you know, you can make salads, you know. So they put me in the back making salads, and I wanted to be the best, and eventually I got on the hotline and kind of worked my way around, and you know, just worked all over South Florida, and kind of eventually just grew up, you know, rose up the ranks, and eventually ended up working at this place, City Cellar in Miami, as a sous chef. And
And that's a more of a wine bar.
That was a wine bar, yeah. That was my first like chef job, you know. Mm. And I mean, it was awesome. And my boss actually said to me, which is like the biggest compliment, like, you're too talented, like you need to go to New York City. And like, as bad as I don't want to lose you, I want to help you, like you need to go. And it was awesome. It was like, so I came up here and I staged around. I spent time at, you know, Per Se, John George, Gordon Ramsay. I staged in all these kitchens and kind of tried to get my bearings, you know. And like,
is Gordon Ramsay going to open up a Reset in London as well? What would you do?
I don't know. That, yeah, that's fucked up. yeah, so I just, you know, I absorbed as much as I could, and like, I just loved it, you know. And you know, I didn't really do anything else. I mean, I remember being like 13 and like, all my friends are like, I want a dirt bike. I went for like holiday times. I'm like, you know, Mom, I want a Cuisinart. You know, what's wrong with you? I want a Cuisinart. I want like Wusthof knives.
Well, tell us about, so, you know, a lot of musicians have, notably the Beatles have mentioned that smoking was part of their creative process. Right. Did you feel that, or was that just a moment in your life?
It was a moment. I mean, it lasted a long time, and you know, I decided to get healthy a few years back and kind of cut all that stuff, and you know, so I've been going strong with that. But yeah, it was. I mean, it definitely was. I mean, I would definitely get intoxicated. I mean, there were house parties and, you know, in high school, and you know, the keg would be tapped, and everybody would be totally wasted, but like hungry with the munchies, and like it didn't matter where we were, I would go into the cabinet and grab like chickpeas and capers and peanut butter and come up with some concoction. Everyone would just like love it, you know. And that's like, I was just always in the kitchen, you know, and it would annoy people. They'd be like, would you ever shut up about food? Like, shut up. You know what I mean?
Maybe that in some way prepared you for Iron Chef.
Yes, I think that's true. Yeah, that's true.
It's like, you know, under 2 a.m., you know, intoxicated, you know, stressed, everyone's hungry, and yeah,
it's true.
Well, tell us a little bit about that, about the Iron Chef experience. I don't really know a ton about it, but I always think, I'm like, they have to, you know, like those dishes aren't completely on the fly, right?
No. Well, you plan a bunch of menus. I mean, you go in there with an idea of like, I had a foundation of what I would want to do, and then when I saw the ingredient, I just plugged it.
Okay.
So I didn't go in there like with no, you know, I mean, you got to plan. You have to have an idea.
They give you an idea of what the ingredient might be. Is that
they don't really tell you, but they give you, you know, a ballpark. You're in a theme of a bunch of ingredients, so you kind of have an idea of what direction. Okay. But you don't know the ingredients.
Did you practice dishes specifically for that, or it's like, I cook every night for a living, like I'm good.
All I did practice is timing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't about the dishes. It was about making sure you can do it in time, because you know, it's so easy to like watch the show and, you know, like young cooks with their egos, like, oh, I can do that. I'd whoop his ass, blah, blah, blah. But like when you're in there and the nerves are going and the cameras are all over your head and the clock does not stop, that's 60 minutes. I mean, it's real, you know, and you have no idea where you are. And, you know, you have this huge studio kitchen. It's nerve wracking, you know, and you're not in your own environment, you know. I remember I ran to the fridge to grab the grouper and like dropped the fish on the floor. I mean, they edited that out, thank God. But like, you know, it was like, it was crazy, you know, and like, I almost like I was butchering the fish and almost cut myself cause I was so nervous. But
how did you choose which chef you were going to go against?
Zakarian. I was just kind of the way it fell.
Do you actually choose or do they tell you?
Yeah, they kind of choose for you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like it's like a rotating thing, you know?
So.
Yeah. But he's a ninja, man. He's like, he's no joke for sure. I mean, all those guys, like, you know, again, it's easy to be judging and, you know, but like to go on there day in and day out and do that. And, you know, even if, you know, yes, you are planning dishes ahead of time, you might not know, you know, you don't know the ingredient, mm-hmm. but the fact that you constantly have to be pushing the envelope and thinking and being creative and
it's not your
and
kitchen.
Executing it. Yeah. It's tough. It's right. tough.
I can only imagine. I mean, it's hard enough to get food out in time when people are waiting and, you know, in your kitchen that you're used to,
right,
but
right, right.
a completely, you know, foreign environment.
Totally foreign. I remember they were picking me up in the morning. It was like 5 a.m. and I'm just thinking in my head, like, holy shit, like, how am I going to do this? You know, like, you know, and like, you know, but I got there and then I saw everything and I was like, holy shit. I mean, there's just like, it's literally like a studio. I mean, there's the whole ceiling is just smoke machines and cameras and, you know, it was like totally, totally nuts. And they just build you up because like you go pick through the china and then, you know, you walk through, you look at the kitchen, you see where the fridge is, they show you where the produce is, you know, spatulas, blenders, you could set up anything you need. And the whole time you're wondering, like, what's the ingredient going to be? You know what I mean? Like, what menu am I picking? Which direction yeah. am I going?
Like, where's the room where they tell me what the secret ingredient is? Right.
Can I look under? Where's the fridge with the?
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of just like, you know, but the whole time I just kept on. Like, I was, you know, I just, you know, you just kind of kick it into mode. You know, it's like I've always been that way. Like I get like anxious and worried, and you know, I'm nuts. Yeah. But like when it comes down to things, like when opening the restaurant or getting through service or executing a party or. You know, it's like I get nuts and then, but I was just, I just push forward, you know, and.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on the win. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, thanks. Definitely felt good.
You know, you mentioned a few years back, you made the decision to get a little bit healthier. I mean, I'm looking at you now. I've known you for years. You never looked better.
thanks.
Even after, you know, restaurant opening, baby, big move, you know, you're looking awesome. Tell me a little bit about that decision and what that entailed.
Well, I mean, you know, years ago it was just partying too much. So I was like, oh, I got to just stop with that. So I kind of just stopped doing that, and then life just started to get better. I had money in my pocket. People wanted to be around me again. It was kind of like, you know, I was like, oh, this makes sense, you know? So I did that, and I've always been an extremist. I mean, so that's, you know, just the way I am. It's like when I decide to do something, I just kind of, you know, hence the all or none tattoo on my arm. And then when my son was born, at his year appointment, you know, and I always used to say everyone's like, you're a big guy, but I was like, and you can't trust a skinny chef. You know, I got to taste the food. And so I was at my son's year appointment, and I got on the scale in the doctor's office, in his doctor's office, and I was like, I weighed like 255 pounds, and I'm 5'10". I mean, body index says I should weigh 180, you know, to be healthy. So I was considered obese, and I looked at it, I was like, holy shit, 255 pounds. I went home, I Googled, and my wife's like, you're obese. You're not overweight, you're obese. And I'm like, what, you know? So I kind of at that point said, you know what, I gotta figure something out. So I stopped with the late night Corner Bistro. I stopped, you know, like all the fatty things and the cheeseburgers and the fries and
I
the pizzas.
Too many of those, yeah, bistro, I mean, burgers.
Totally.
At midnight or 1 a.m. Yeah,
exactly. I'd get a bistro burger with fries and then a grilled cheese with bacon. Like, you know,
you get both.
I get both, and I'd eat them both, and I wouldn't even. And I probably could have did it twice over. I mean, I was just a beast, you know. And
the beers go down like much easier at Corner Bistro than anywhere else. I feel like
the place is great.
Yeah,
it's great. They got a serious formula. They figured it out. Yeah, so I just decided to cut. So I consciously made a better like myself, and I started going to the gym a little bit. And I just wasn't into it. It wasn't. I couldn't do the gym. And through somebody I know, somebody actually set me up with this like psychologist weight loss guy. You know, like I didn't pay for it. Like I was like, I'm not gonna go do that. You know, but somebody like did it like for a favor kind of. And I went to see this guy. I'm like, I sat down in his office and like, I'm pretty good at bullshitting people, you know? And this guy just like, he called me out like in 2 seconds. Like he just knew, like, you know, like, and I was like, oh my God. So I had like a lot of respect for this guy because he figured me out in like less than a minute. My wife was laughing. She's like, this guy just like put you in your place, you know? And he's like, come back in a week. Try, don't eat any sugar. Don't eat any carbohydrates for a week. Let's see what happens. You should lose 10 pounds. And I'm like, what? So whatever. I gave it a shot. Go back a week later, get on the scale. I'm 10 pounds less. I'm 240, you know, because I lost 5 pounds on my own. And I just like got excited. I'm like, all right, I'm sticking with it. So I just kind of stuck with it. And I basically just cut carbohydrates. So no bread, no flour, no pasta, no potatoes, no rice, nothing like that. No more desserts. I just ate fish and vegetables and kind of lost all this weight. Yogurt, egg whites, you know. And I still go out. I mean, I went to, since the weight loss, I mean, I've been to Blue Hill at Stone Barns. I've been to 11 Madison Park. I mean, I go out, I've eaten well. I still treat myself, but I just skip the pasta course if there is one, and I don't eat the dessert and I don't touch the bread. You know, I just kind of...
Is that, do you find that's challenging? You say it so matter-of-factly, but...
No, I just kind of do it. I mean, I just do it. I just kind of... And like, as you start to like... As I've lost all this weight, my like hunger is less, you know, like I'm not, you know, I don't crave the food anymore.
One of the interesting things that that came out in the New York Times article about your decision to be healthier was the way that you, I guess this psychologist said that you're a finisher.
Like I'm a finisher.
And I never heard that term before. And I realized that I am also a finisher. Like I have to, if there's like 4 cookies left,
you gotta take
them all down. Yeah. I never realized that about myself.
Yeah.
Until reading that.
No, it's true. I mean, it's you know, some people can handle it. I can't. I mean, you put me down at a table. If we go out and we get a bunch of stuff and we're sitting around, you know what I mean? And like everyone's kind of like, oh, yeah. Like if there's like a little, you know, the daikon garnish or the, you know what I mean? Like it's going in my mouth. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm finishing every plate.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like hungry or not hungry.
Like, you know, like when servers like go to clear like, no. A plate. Yeah, yeah. I'm always like, no. I'll take that.
Yeah, I mean it's true. And like another thing that was cool is like he told me like if you can't moderate, eliminate. So I kind of stick with that. Mm-hmm. So if it's like foods that I can't moderate, like my son's goldfish or something, like I can't touch them because once I put the bag in my hand, I'll finish the bag.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
That's really good. Yeah. That's really good. And do you feel better?
Yeah, definitely feel better. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's I feel my body more. You know, like it's like if I have like an achy shoulder, I could feel it now. It's not like through like this like, you know, it's like. I'm more aware of my body, you know, and it's definitely cool.
And has that affected your cooking at all at the restaurant?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, I mean, again, you go out to eat. It's not, you know, if you want to diet or eat healthy, you know, you could cook for yourself healthy, or you can, you know, there's 25,000 restaurants in New York. You could go to a diet restaurant. So when people come to Reset, I want them to experience the food and it to taste good. So do we over fat, you know, do we just add butter and cream for the hell of it? No. I mean, things are, you know, purees and certain things are made with lipids, but that's because they need to taste good. But, you know, I have gotten into more like citrus-based vinaigrettes and using more stock and less cream, but when I can, you know what I mean? I'm never going to sacrifice the flavor. So it's not, we're not a healthier restaurant. I'm not trying to go that direction, but, you know, you could eat healthy at Reset and not have to feel like, you know, you just like, you know, you get that itis when you leave. So, you know, you can avoid the itis.
eat good and avoid the itis at Reset. Well, yeah. You'll be seeing me avoiding the itis at Reset really soon.
Awesome.
And I encourage everyone, all of our listeners to also go because, again, it's just one of my favorite spots. Great, great West Village restaurant. And it has a ton of soul with you and your wife just bringing it every night. So,
well, thanks, Joe.
Thanks a lot, Jesse. And thanks all of you for listening. This has been In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.